How does the true man of Tao walk through walls without obstruction and stand in fire without being burnt? Not because of cunning or daring, not because he has learned, but because he has unlearned. His nature sinks to its root in the One. His vitality, his power, hide in secret Tao. When he is all one, there is no flaw in him by which a wedge can enter. So a drunken man who falls out of a wagon is bruised, but not destroyed. His bones are like the bones of other men, but his fall is different. His spirit is entire. He is not aware of getting into a wagon or falling out of one. Life and death are nothing to him. He knows no alarm. He meets obstacles without thought, without care, and takes them without knowing they are there. If there is such security in wine, how much more in Tao? The wise man is hidden in Tao. Nothing can touch him.
How does the true man of Tao walk through walls without obstruction and stand in fire without being burnt? This is one of the most basic and secret teachings. Ordinarily, we live through cunning, cleverness, strategy. We don't live like small children, innocent. We plan, we protect, we make all the safeguards possible. But what is the result? Ultimately, what happens? All the safeguards are broken. All cunningness proves foolishness. Ultimately, death takes us away. Tao says that your cunningness will not help you. Because what is your cunningness? A fight against the whole? With whom you are cunning? With nature, with Tao, with God? Whom do you think you are deceiving? The source from where you are born, and the source to which you will finally go. The wave trying to deceive the ocean, the leaf trying to deceive the tree, a cloud trying to deceive the sky. Who do you think you are trying to deceive? With whom you are playing? Once it is understood, a man becomes innocent, drops his cunningness, all his strategies, simply accepts there is no other way than to accept nature as it is and flows with it. Then there is no resistance. Then he is just like a child who is going with his father in deep trust. It happened once. Mulla Nasruddin's son came home and he said that he believed in a boy, in a friend. He gave him his toy to play. Now he is not returning it back. What should I do? Mulla Nasruddin looked at him and said, you go on this ladder up the born found, trusted his father. When he was 10 feet high, Nasruddin said, "No, you jump into my arms." The boy hesitated a little, and he said, "If I fall now, then I will be hurt." Nasruddin said, "When I am there, you need not worry, take a jump." The boy jumped. Nasruddin stood aside. The boy fell down. He started crying and weeping. And then Nasruddin said, "Now you know, never believe anybody. Not even if your father is saying anything. Not even your father. Don't believe anybody. Otherwise you will be deceived all your life." This is what every father, every parent, every school, every teacher is teaching you. This is your learning. Don't believe in anybody. Don't trust. Otherwise you will be deceived. You become cunning. In the name of cleverness, you become cunning, untrusting. And once a man is untrusting, he has lost contact with the source. Only trust is the bridge. And then the whole life is wasted. You fight an impossible fight in which defeat is bound to be there. It is absolutely certain. It is better to realize it sooner, because at the moment of death everybody realizes that it has been a defeat. But then nothing can be done. Real intelligence is not cunningness. It is totally different. Real intelligence is to look into things. And whenever you look into things deeply, you will come to know that you are just a wave, that this whole is the ocean. There is no need to worry. The whole has produced you. It will take care. You have come out of the hole. There is no enemy to you. You need not worry. You need not plan. And when you are not worried, not planning, for the first time life starts. For the first time you feel free of worries and life happens to you. This intelligence is religion. This intelligence gives you more trust and finally total trust. This intelligence leads you to the ultimate nature, acceptance, what Buddha has called the Radha. Buddha says, whatsoever happens, happens. Nothing else can happen. Nothing else is possible. Don't ask for the otherwise. Be in a let go. And allow the whole to function. And when you allow the whole to function, then you are not a barrier, a resistance. Then you cannot be defeated. In Japan, through Buddha, Lao Tse and John Dasein, they have developed a particular art they call Zendo. Zendo means the chain of sword, the art of the warrior. And like them, nobody knows it. The way they have developed is the supreme. It takes years, even the whole life, to learn Zendo. Because the learning consists in acceptance. You cannot accept in ordinary life. How can you accept when a warrior is standing before you to kill you? How can you accept when the sword is raised against you? Every moment, any moment, death is near. And the art of sinner says, if you can accept the sword, the enemy, the one who is going to kill you, and there is no distrust, even the enemy is the friend, and you are not afraid, you are not trembling, you become a pillar of energy, unbreakable. The sword will break on you, but you cannot be broken. And there may not be any possibility, even that you should be striked. It happened once, there was a great Zendo master. He was 80. And traditionally, the disciple will succeed him. Who can defeat him? So all the disciples hoped that someday he will accept their challenge. And now he was getting old. So one disciple who was the most clever, strategic, very powerful, but not a master of Zendo, just skilled in the art, a good warrior, knowing everything about this world means it, but not a pillar of energy yet afraid, fighting. The Tathagata has not happened. He went to the master again and again and said, now the time has come and you are getting old. And you may become so old that I cannot challenge you in a contest. I challenge you, accept my challenge, Master, and give me a chance to show what I have learned from you. The Master will laugh and avoid. The disciple started thinking that the Master has become so weak and old that he is afraid. He is just trying to evade. So one night he insisted and he said, now I will not go if you don't say yes, tomorrow morning. You have to accept, I challenge you. He became angry, this disciple. You are getting old and then there will be no chance for me to sow what I have learned from you. And this has been the tradition of it. The master said, if you insist, your very insistence shows that you are not ready and prepared. There's too much excitement, this ego to challenge. You have not yet become capable. But if you insist, then okay, do one thing. You go to the nearby monastery, there is a monk. He was my disciple 10 years before. But he became so efficient in Zendo that he threw his sword and became a sannyasi. And he was the right successor to me. He never challenged. And he was the one who could have challenged and even defeated. So first you go and challenge that monk. If you can defeat him, then come to me. If you cannot defeat him, then just drop the idea. The man immediately started towards the monastery. By the morning he was there. He challenged the monk. He couldn't believe that this monk can be a Zendo master, lean and thin, continuously meditating, eating only once a day. The monk listened and laughed, and he said, you have come to give me a challenge, even your master cannot challenge me. Even he is afraid. Listening to this, the disciple got completely mad. He said, "Stand immediately. This is the sword I have brought to, knowing well that you are a monk and you may not be there. Come out in the garden." It is insulting, and I do not listen. The monk looked absolutely undisturbed. He said, "You are just a child. You are not a wise. You will be killed immediately. Why you are asking for death unnecessarily?" He made him still more angry. And then the boat came out. And the monk said, "I will not need the sword, because a real master never needs it. I am not going to attack you. I am only going to give you a chance to attack me. So your sword is broken. You are not a man, you are a child. And people will laugh at me if I take the sword." It was too much. The young man jumped. But then he saw the monk standing. He was up to now, the monk was sitting, he stood. He closed his eyes and he started swaying. Right and left, right and left. And suddenly this young man saw that the monk has disappeared. There is only a pillar of energy. The face is no more there. A solid pillar of energy. Sway. He became afraid. He started retreating and the pillar of energy started moving towards him, swaying. He threw his sword. He screamed, he said, "Save me." The monk again sat down, he started laughing. The face came back. The energy disappeared. And he said, "I told you before, even your master is not a match to me. Go and tell him." Perspiring, trembling, nervous, this disciple came back to the master. And he said, "How much grateful I am to your compassion towards me. I am no match. Even that monk destroyed me completely. But one thing I couldn't tolerate. That's why I got into it." He said, "Even your master is not a match to me." The master started laughing and he said, "So that rascal played the trick on you also." You got angry, then he could see through you. Because anger is a hole in the being. And that has become his basic trick. Whenever I send somebody, he starts talking against me. My disciples, of course, become angry. When they are angry, he comes to know that they have loopholes. And when you have holes, you cannot fight. Whenever you are angry, your being sleepless. Whenever you desire, your being has holes in it. Whenever you are jealous, filled with hatred, sexuality, you are not a pillar of energy. Hence, Buddhas have been teaching to be desireless. Because whenever you are desireless, energy is not moving out. Energy moves within. It becomes an inner circle. It becomes an electric field, a bioelectric field. When that field is there, without any leakage, you are a pillar. You cannot be defeated. But you are not thinking of victory, remember. Because if you are thinking of victory, you cannot be a pillar of energy. Then that desire becomes a leakage. You are weak. not because others are strong. You are weak because you are filled with so many desires. You are defeated, not because others are more cunning and clever. You are defeated because you have so many leakages. Tathata, acceptance, total acceptance means no desire. Desire arises out of non-acceptance. You cannot accept a certain situation, desire arises. You live in a hut and you cannot accept it. This is too much for the ego. You want a palace. Then you are a poor man. Not because you live in a hut. No. In huts, emperors have lived. Buddha has lived under the tree. And he was not a poor man. You cannot find a more richer man anywhere. No, your heart doesn't make you poor. The moment you desire the palace, you are a poor man. And you are not poor because others are living in palace. You are poor because the desire to live in the palace creates a comparison with the heart. Becomes single. You are poor. Whenever there is discontent, there is poverty. Whenever there is no discontent, you are rich. And you have such riches, no thief can steal them. You have such riches, no government can take them by taxation. You have such riches, which cannot be taken away from you in any way. You have a fort of your being, unbreakable, unpenetrable. Once a desire moves and your energy starts falling, you become weak from desire. You become weak from longing. Whenever you are not longing and content, whenever nothing is moving, your whole being is still, says Lao Tzu, then you are an impregnable fort. Fire cannot burn you. Death is impossible. That's what is the meaning, fire cannot burn you. Death is impossible. You cannot die. You have got the secret key of eternal life. And this happens in ordinary circumstances also sometimes. A house is on fire. Everybody dies. But a small child survives. There is an accident. The old people die, and small children survive. People say, this is a miracle, God's grace. No, nothing of the sort. Because the child accepted that situation also. Those who were cunning, they started running, trying to save themselves. They got into trouble. By themselves, the child rested. He was not even aware that something is happening, that he is going to die. He is saved through his innocence. It happens every day. Go and look in the night near a bar, a wine shop. Drunkards falling on the street, lying in the drainage, absolutely healthy. In the morning they will get up. They may be bruised, they may tell. But no harm has happened to their bodies. Their bones are intact. They have got no fractures. You try to fall like a drunkard on the street. immediately you will have fractures. And he is falling every day, every night, many times. Nothing is happening to him. What is the matter? What is the secret? When he is drunk, there is no desire. He is absolutely at ease here and now. When he is drunk, he is not afraid. There is no fear. And when there is no fear, there is no cunningness. Cunningness comes out of fear. So more fearful a person, more cunningness you will find in. A brave man is not cunning. He can depend on his bravery. But a man who is afraid, a coward, he can depend only on cunningness. The more inferior a person, the more cunning. The more superior a person, the more innocent. Cunningness is a substitute. When one is drunk, absolutely drunk, future disappears, past disappears. I have heard once it happened. Mulla Nasruddin was walking with his wife, absolutely drunk. She got hold of him, lying on the street, and was bringing him to home. Of course, arguing and winning all the arguments because he was alone. Mulla Nasruddin was not there, he was simply coming along with her. Then suddenly she saw that a bull was coming, mad. There was no time to make Nasruddin alert. So she jumped into a bush. The bull came, spinned Nasruddin almost 50 feet high. Nasruddin fell down in a ditch, crawled out of it and looked at the wife and he said, "If you do this again to me, I really tell I will lose my temper." This is too much. When one is drunk, ordinary wine gives so much power. What about Tao, the absolute drunkenness? What about Krishna or Buddha, the greatest drunkards? So much drink with the divine, so much drunk with the divine, that not even a trace of the ego is left. You cannot hurt them because they are not there. You cannot insult them because there is no one who will resist the insult and create a wound. Your insult will pass through them as if it passed through an empty house. Their boats are empty. A breeze comes in and passes with no barrier. When the breeze has gone, the house is not even aware that the breeze had been there. The appeal of wine is really because you are too egoistic. You are too much burdened by it and sometimes you want to forget it. So the world will have to follow alcohol or Tao. These are the alternatives. Only a religious man, a really religious man, can be beyond alcohol, marijuana, LSD, any type of drugs. Only a religious man can be beyond it. Otherwise, how you can be beyond it? The ego is too much. The burden is so much. It is constantly on your head. You have to forget yourselves. But if the wine can do so much, what the divine wine can do, you cannot conceive. What the wine is doing, for certain moments, So chemical change in the brain, in the body, you forget yourself. But this is momentary. Deep down, you are there. After a few hours, the chemical effect is gone. Your body has thrown the wine out. The ego asserts again. But there is a wine, I tell you, God is that wine, Tao. Our several names you like to call it. Where once you taste it, the ego is gone forever. Nobody ever comes back from that drunkenness. That's why Sufis always talk of wine. Sufis always talk of woman. Their woman is not the woman you know. God is the woman. And their wine is not the wine that you know. God is the wine. Umar Khayyam has been misunderstood, tremendously misunderstood, because of Fitzgerald. He has been misunderstood all over the world. Umar Khayyam's Rubaiyat appeared to be as if he is writing in praise of wine and woman. Not at all. Umar Khayyam is a Sufi, a mystic. He talks of this wine which comes from Tao. He talks of this wine in which you are lost forever and forever. This intoxicant, this divine intoxicant, is not temporary, it is non-temporal. It is not momentary, it is eternal. And Sufis talk of God as the woman. Then that embrace is eternal. Then there is no separation. It is ultimate. If you can understand this, then you are intelligent, not through your strategies, cunningness, arithmetic, your logic. If you can look deep into the existence, from where have you come? Where you are going? With whom you are fighting? And why? These same moments can become ecstatic. You are losing in fight. Now see the sutra. Wholeness. You think yourself as the individual, then you are wrong. Only the whole exists. This is false. This is the appearance that I think I am. This is the most false thing in the world. And because of this, I am, fight arises. If I am, then this whole seems inimical. Then everything seems to be against me. Not that anything is against me, it cannot be. These trees have helped. This sky has helped. This water has helped. This earth has created you. Then nature is your mother. How can the mother be against you? You have come out of it. But you think I am as an individual, and then the fight arises. It is one-sided. You start the fight. The nature goes on laughing. The God goes on enjoying. Even a small child, the moment he starts feeling I, the fight arises. In a supermarket, a small child was insisting on a toy. The mother positively said that, no, I'm not going to purchase it, you have got enough. The child got angry and said, Mom, I have never seen a more mean girl than you. You are the meanest. The mother looked at the child, the face, the anger, and he said, wait, you will meet. You will certainly meet the real mean girl. Just wait. In one house, the mother was insisting to the child to do the homework, and he was not listening. Went on playing with the toys. Then they said, do you listen to me or not? The child looked up and said, who do you think I am, daddy? Even a small child starts fighting. The ego has a reason. He knows that he can be put silenced. Not he. The moment the child feels he is separate, the natural unity is broken. And then the whole life becomes a struggle and fight. The Western psychology insists that the ego should be strengthened. That's the difference between the Eastern attitude and the Western. The Western psychology insists that the ego should be strengthened. The child must have a strong ego. He must fight, struggle. Only then he will be mature. The child is in mother's womb, one with the mother, not even aware that he is. He is without any consciousness. In a deeper sense, all consciousness is illness. Not that he is unconscious. He is aware. His being is there, but without any self-consciousness. The M is there, but the I has not gone yet. The child feels, lives, is fully alive, but never feels that he is separate. The mother and the child are one. Then the child is born. The first separation happens. And the first cry. Now he is moving. The veil is moving away from the host. Western psychologists say we will train the child to be independent, to be individual. Jung's psychology is known as the way of individuation. He must become an individual, absolutely separate. He must fight. That's why in the West so much rebellion. Of the new generation. This rebellion is not created by the new generation. This rebellion is created by Freud, Jung, Adler, and the company. They have given the base. Fight will give you a more stronger ego. It will shape you. So fight the mother, fight the father, fight the teacher, fight the society. Life is a struggle. And Darwin started the whole trend when he said, only the fittest survive. Survival of the fittest. So the stronger you are in your ego, you will survive. West lives through politics. East has a totally different attitude. And Tao is the core, the very essence of the Eastern consciousness. It says no individuality, no ego, no fight. Become one with the mother. There is no enemy. The question is not of conquering. Even a man, a very knowledgeable man, a very penetrating, logical man, Bertrand Russell, thinks in terms of conquest, conquering the nature, the conquest of nature. Science seems to be a struggle, a fight with nature. How to break the lock? How to open the secrets? How to grab the secrets from nature? Eastern consciousness is totally different. Eastern consciousness says ego is the problem. Don't make it stronger. Don't create any fight. And not the fittest, but the humblest survives. That's why I insist again and again that Jesus is from the East. That's why he could not be understood in the West. The West has misunderstood him. East could have understood him, because East knows Lao Tse, Chuang Tzu, Buddha. He belongs to Buddha, Chuang Tzu, Lao Tse. He says, those who are the last will be the first in my kingdom of God. The humblest, the meekest will possess the kingdom of God. The poor in spirit is the goal. Who is poor in spirit? The empty boat. Who is not at all? No claim for anything, no position for anything, no self. He lives as an absence. Nature gives her secrets. There is no need to grab. There is no need to kill. There is no need to break the law. You love nature and nature gives you secrets. Love is the key. Conquering is absurd. So what has happened in the West? This conquering has destroyed whole nature. So now, there is a cry for ecology. How to balance? We have destroyed nature completely because we have broken all the laws. And we have destroyed the whole balance. And now through that imbalance, humanity is going to die sooner or later. Chuang Tzu can be understood now. Because he says, don't fight with nature. Be in such a deep love. Become so one that through love, through heart to heart, the secret is given. And the secret is that you are not the individual. You are the whole. And why be satisfied with just being a part? Why not be the whole? Why not possess the whole universe? Why possess the small things? Ramtirtha used to say, that when I close my eyes, I see stars moving within me, sun rising within me, moon rising within me. I see oceans and their skies. I am the vast. I am the whole universe. And for the first time he went to the West and he started saying these things. People thought he has gone. Somebody asked, who created the world? He said, I. It is within me. This I is not the ego, not the individual. This I is the universe, the God. He looks crazy. This claim looks too much, but look in his eyes, there is no ego. He is not asserting anything, is simply stating a fact. You are the world. Why be a part, a tiny part, and why unnecessarily create trouble when you can be the whole? This sutra is concerned with wholeness. Don't be the individual, be the whole. Don't be the ego, then you can become the divine. Why be satisfied with such a small, tiny thing, ugly? How does the true man of Tao walk through walls without obstruction and stand in fire without being burnt? Somebody asked from us that we have heard a man of Tao can walk through walls without obstruction. Why? If you don't have any obstruction within you, no obstruction can obstruct you. This is the rule. If you have no resistance within you in your heart, the whole world is open for you. There is no resistance. The world is just a reflection. It is a big mirror. If you have resistance, then the whole world has resistance. It happened once. A king made a palace of millions of mirrors. All the walls were covered with mirrors. A dog entered into the palace. He saw millions of dogs all around. He started barking just to protect, very intelligent dog, just to protect so many millions of dogs all around. Life is in danger. He must have become tense. He started barking, and when he started barking, those millions of dogs also started barking. In the morning, the dog was found dead. And there he was alone. Only mirrors were there. Nobody was fighting with him. Nobody was there to fight. But in the mirror, he looked himself, became afraid. And when he started fighting, the mirror reflection also started fighting. And he was alone. And there were millions and millions of dogs around. Can you think the hell he would have lived that night? You are living in that hell right now. Millions and millions of dogs barking around. In every mirror, in every relationship, you see the enemy. A man of Tao can walk through the walls because he has got no one in his heart. A man of Tao finds nowhere the enemy because he is not the enemy inside. A man of Tao finds all mirrors vacant, all boats empty, because his own boat is empty. He is mirrored. He has no face of his own. So how you can mirror? How can you reflect a man of Tao? All mirrors remain silent. A man of Tao passes. No footprints are left behind, no trace. All mirrors remain silent, nothing reflects him. Because he is not there, he is absent. When the ego disappears, you are absent. And then you are whole. When the ego is there, you are present. And you are just a tiny part, a very tiny part, and very ugly at that. The part will always be ugly. And that's why we have to try to make it beautiful in so many ways. But a man with the ego cannot be beautiful. Beauty happens only to those who are without egos. Then the beauty has something of the unknown in it. Something immeasurable. Remember, this ugliness can be measured. It has limits. Beauty, the so-called beauty, can be measured. It has limits. But the real beauty cannot be measured. It has no limits. It is mysterious. It goes on and on and on. You cannot be finished with a Buddha. You can enter him, you will never come out. Endless. His beauty is never finished. But the ego goes on trying to be beautiful. Somehow you remember the beauty of the whole. Somehow you remember the silence of the womb. Somehow deep down you know the bliss of being one, the unison, the unity with existence. Because of that, many desires arise. You know the beauty of being a god, and you have to live like a beggar. So what do? You create faces. You paint yourself. But it is impossible. Because all things are things. And deep down the ugliness remains. It happened once, a woman was walking on the seashore. She found a bottle. She opened the bottle and a genie came out. And just as all genies are good, the genie said, "You have broken my prison. You have made me free. So now you can ask anything and I will fulfill your fondest desire or wish." Genies are not found every day, on every soul, in every body. It rarely happens and only in stories. But the woman didn't think even for a single moment. She said, "I want to become a beautiful person. Hairs like Elizabeth Taylor. Eyes like Brigitte Bardot. Body like Sophia Loren." The genie looked again and he said, "Honey, put me back in the box." And this is, you are asking, everybody asks me this. That's why genies have disappeared from the world. They are so afraid of you. You are asking the impossible. It cannot happen because the part can never be beautiful. Just think, my hand can be cut. Can that hand be beautiful? It will grow more and more ugly, deteriorate. It will start smelling. How can my hand be beautiful, separate from me? The separation brings death. Unison brings life. In the whole, you are alive. Alone, separate, you are already dead or dying. My eyes, bring them out. And what they are? Even stones, colored stones, will be more beautiful than them. Because they are still with the whole. Look at flowers. Then it is not beautiful. The glory is gone. It was beautiful just a moment before, when it was joined with the roots with the earth. Uprooted, you float like egos. You are ill. And you will remain ill, and nothing can be up in the hell. And all your efforts, howsoever clever, are going to fail. Only in the whole you are beautiful. Only in the whole you are lovely. Only in the whole grace is possible. Not because of cunning, the man of power walks through walls without obstruction and stands in fire without being burned. Not because of cunning or daring, and not because he has learned, but because he has unlearned. Learning goes into the ego. Learning strengthens the ego. That's why pundits, scholars, they have the subtlest egos. Brahmins, they have the subtlest egos. Learning gives them scope. Learning gives them space. They become tumors, egos. Their whole being is explanted by the ego then. More learned a man, more difficult to live with, more difficult to be religious, more difficult to reach the temple. It is almost impossible for him to know God, because he himself now lives like a tumor, and the tumor has its own life now, the ego tumor. And it explains, the more you know, the less is the possibility for prayer to happen. So says Chuang Tzu, not because of cunning. He is not calculating. He is not cunning or daring. Because daring, cunning, calculating, all are part of the ego. A man of power is neither a coward nor a brave man. He does not know what bravery is, what cowardness is. He lives. He is not self-conscious. Not because he has learned, but because he has unlearned. Whole religion is a process of unlearning. Because learning is the process of the ego, unlearning is the process of the non-ego. Learning, your boat is filled, filled with yourself. It happens. Mullah Nasruddin used to have a ferry boat, and when times were not good, he would carry passengers from one bank to the other. One day, a great scholar, a grammarian, a pundit, was going in his ferry boat to the other shore. The pundit, the scholar, asked Nasruddin, "Do you know Quran? Have you learned the scriptures?" Nasruddin said, "No, no time." The scholar said, "Your half of the life is wasted." Then suddenly there arose a storm, and the small boat was just on the waves. Any moment it will be drowned. Asked Nasruddin, "Schoolmaster, do you know how to swim?" The man was very much afraid, perspiring. He said, "No." Said Nasruddin, "Then your whole life is wasted." Ongoing. Now, this boat cannot go to the other shore. But people think learning can become a boat, or learning can become a substitute for swimming. No. Scriptures can become boats? No. They are too heavy. You can drown with them. but you cannot cross the river. Unlearning will make you weightless. Unlearning will make you again innocent. When you don't know, in that not knowing, what happens? The most beautiful phenomenon, the greatest ecstasy happens when you don't know. There is a silence when you don't know. Somebody asks a question and you don't know. Life is a riddle and you don't know. Everywhere is mystery and you are still there, not knowing, wondering. When you don't know, there is wonder. And wonder is the most religious quality. The deepest religious quality is wonder. Only a child can wonder. A man who knows cannot wonder. And without wonder, no one has ever reached the divine. It is the wondering heart, to whom everything is a mystery. A butterfly is a mystery. A seed is sprouting is a mystery. And remember, nothing has been solved. All your science has not done anything. The seed is sprouting, it is still a mystery, and it is going to remain a mystery. Even if the science can create the seed, the sprouting will remain a mystery. A child is born, it is a mystery born. Even if the child can be produced in a test tube, it makes no difference. The mystery remains the same. You are here, it is such a mystery. You have not earned it. You cannot say to the universe that I am here because I have earned it. It is a sheer gift. You are here for no reason at all. If you were not here, what difference does it make? If you were not here, to what court you would have appealed? This sheer existence, this breathing that goes in and out, this moment that you are here, listening to me, to the breeze, to the words, this moment that you are alive, it is such a mystery. If you can face it without any knowledge, you will enter into it. If you face it with a knowledge, you say, I know the answer, the doors are closed. Not because of the mystic, the doors are closed because of your knowledge, your theories, your philosophy, your theology, your Christianity, your Hinduism, they close the door. A man who thinks he knows does not know. Upanishads go on saying, a man who thinks he does not know, he knows. Says Socrates, when a man really knows, he knows only one thing, that he does not know. Chuang Tzu said, but because he has unlearned, whatsoever the world taught him, whatsoever the society taught him, whatsoever the parents and the utilitarians he has taught, he has become again a child, a small child. His eyes are again filled with wonder. He looks all around. Everywhere is mystery. Ego kills the mystery. Whether it is the ego of a scientist, or whether it is the ego of a scholar, of a philosopher, it makes no difference. The ego says, I know. And the ego says, if I don't know, then sooner or later I will come to know. The ego says there is nothing unknowable. There are two divisions for the ego, the known and the unknown. The known is that path which the ego has already traveled. And the unknown is that path which the ego will travel. It is possible to travel, but there is nothing unknowable. The ego leaves no mystery in the world. And when there is no mystery around you, there cannot be any mystery there. And when mystery disappears, all songs disappear. When mystery disappears, poetry is dead. When mystery disappears, the god is not in the temple. Then there is a statue dead. When mystery disappears, there is no possibility for love. Because only two mysteries fall in love with each other. You know, then there is no possibility for love. Knowledge is linked to love. And love is always far unlearning. But because he has unlearned, his nature sinks to its root. In the one, his vitality, his power, hide in the secret power. His nature sinks to its root. The ego exists in the head, remember? And you carry your head very high. And the root is just at the other pole of your being. Chuang Tzu and Lao Tse used to say, concentrate on the toe. Close your eyes and move into the toe and remain there. That will give you a balance. The head has given you much unbalance. The toe looks like they are joking. They are true. They are not joking. They are right. Move from the head. Head is not the root. But we are too much in the head. His nature sinks to its root, to the very source. The wave goes deeper into the ocean. In the one, and remember, the source is one. The waves may be many, millions, but the ocean is one. You are separate there, I am separate here. But just look a little deeper to the roots, and we are one. We are like branches in the same tree. But look at the branches and they are separate. Deep down they are one. Deeper you go, you will find less and less multiplicity. More and more unity. Deepest it is one. That's why Hindus say the non-dual, the one Advaita. His vitality, his power, hide in the secret Tao. And whatsoever vitality comes to the man of Tao, it is not manipulated, it is not created by him, it is given by the roots. He is wider because he is rooted. He is wider because he has rejoined the ocean, the one. He is back to the source. He has come to the mother. When he is all one, there is no flaw in him by which a wedge can enter. And whenever one is rooted in the deepest core of his being, which is one, then there is no flaw. You cannot penetrate such a man. Swords cannot go in him. Fire cannot burn him. How can you destroy the ultimate? You can destroy the moment. How can you destroy the ultimate? You can destroy the wave. How can you destroy the ocean? You can destroy the individual. You cannot destroy the soul. The form can be killed, but the formless. How you will kill the formless? Where you will find the sword that can kill the formless? Krishna has said in Gita, Nenam Chidanti Sastram. No sword can kill it. No fire can burn it. Not that if you go and kill Chuang Tzu, you will not be able to kill. You will be able to kill the form, but the form is not Chuang Tzu. and he will laugh. It happened. Alexander was going back from India. Suddenly he remembered, because he had one of the greatest logicians as a speaker, Aristotle. Aristotle is the original source of all Western stupidity. He is the father. He created the logical mind. He created the analysis. He created the method of deception. He created the ego and the individual. And he was the teacher of Alexander. He had told Alexander to bring a Hindu mystic when he comes back. Because polar opposites are always interested. He must have been deeply interested. What this Hindu mystic is, what type of man who lives beyond logic, who says there is only one, not two, who joins all the contradictions and paradoxes, whose whole attitude is of synthesis, not of analysis. He never believes in the past, he always believes in the over. What type of man? So he told Alexander, when you come back, bring with you a Hindu mystic, a sannyasi. I would like to see that phenomena is rare. A man who lives beyond mind and says that there is something beyond mind. Aristotle never believed that there can be anything beyond mind. Mind is all. When Alexander was returning, then he suddenly remembered. So he asked his soldiers to go and find a great Hindu mystic, a great sannyasi, a saint, a sage. They inquired in the town and they said, yes, just by the side of the river, a naked man stands. For years he has been standing there. And we think he is a mystic. We cannot be certain because he never speaks much. And we cannot be certain because we don't understand him much. Whatsoever he says seems to be very illogical. Maybe it is true, maybe it is not true. Alexander said, this is the right man, my master, who has created logic. He would like to see this illogical. When you go and tell him that Alexander invites you. The soldiers went. They told this naked man that Alexander the Great invites you. You will be a royal guest. Every comfort, convenience will be given to you. So you don't bother. The man started laughing and he said, the man who calls himself the great, he is a fool. You go and tell him. And I don't keep company with fools. That's why I am standing alone here for many years. If I had to keep company with fools, you think India has less? The town is full. They were very much disturbed, those soldiers. But they had to report. Alexander asked what that man said. Dandami was the name. This man. Alexander in his reports has used the word Dandamis. Alexander felt annoyed. But this was the last village, the boundary, and he will be moving out of India. So he said, it is better I should go and see what type of man is this. He may have remembered Diogenes, maybe the same type, naked, standing near the river. The same had happened with Diogenes. He had also laughed and thought that he is a fool. He came with a naked sword. And he told that, follow me, I will cut your hair immediately. Because I don't believe in discussions, I believe in orders. That man laughed and he said, you cut, don't wait. The hair you will be cutting, I have cut long before. This is nothing new. I'm already headless. You cut it. And I tell you, when the head will fall down on the earth, you will also see it falling and I will also see it fall. Because I am not the head. The men's vow can be budged. But still, the man of power cannot be burnt. The farm is always on fire. It is burning already. But the farmless is never touched by any fire. From where comes the power? From where comes this vitality? They hide in secret Tao. Tao means the great nature. Tao means the great ocean. Tao means the great source. So a drunken man who falls out of a wagon is bruised, but not destroyed. His bones are like the bones of other men, but his fall is different. His spirit is entire. The ego is not there. His spirit is entire. He is not aware of getting into a wagon or falling out of one. Life and death are nothing to him. He knows no alarm. He meets obstacles without thought, without care, and takes them without knowing they are there. If there is such security in wine, how much more in Tao? The wise man is hidden in Tao, nothing can touch him. Watch a drunkard, because the man of Tao is in many ways similar to him. He walks, but there is no walk. That's why he looks imbalanced, wobbly. He walks, but there is no direction. He is not going anywhere. He walks, but the boat is empty, even for momentarily, but it is empty. Watch a drunkard, follow him, and see what is happening to him. If somebody hits him, he is not annoyed. If he falls down, he accepts the falling. He doesn't resist. He falls down as if he is dead. People are laughing. People are joking about him. He is not worried. He may even joke with them. He may start laughing with them. He may start laughing on himself. What has happened? Momentarily, through chemicals, his ego is not there. The ego is a construction. You can drop it through chemicals also. It is a construction. It is not a reality. It is not substantial in you. It is through society that you have learned it. Alcohol, simply drops you out of society. That's why society is always against our God. The government is always against our God. The university is always against our God. All the moralists always against alcohol because alcohol is dangerous. It gives you a glimpse out of the society. That's why so much propaganda in America and in the Western countries against drugs. They have become very much scared, the government, the politicians, the church, the Pope, they all have become scared. Because the new generation is too much in drugs. It is very dangerous for the society. Because once you have glimpses beyond society, you can never become a really adjusted part to it. You will always remain an outsider. Once you have a glimpse of the non-ego, then the society cannot dominate you very easily. And if one goes too much in the drugs, then it is possible the ego may be settled completely. Then you will become just like mad. Once or twice, a drug will give you a glimpse. Just a window will open and close. But if you persist and you become addicted to it, the ego may suddenly drop. And this is the problem. Ego will drop, but the non-ego will not arise. You will go mad, schizophrenic, split. Religion works through the other corner, through the other end. It tries to bring the non-ego first. And the more the non-ego comes, more the whole asserts, the ego drops automatically by and by. Before the ego drops, the whole has taken possession. You will not be mad. You will not become abnormal. You will be simply natural. You will fall outside society, into nature. Through drugs also you can fall out of society, but into madness. That's why religions are also against drugs. Because the society has given you a working arrangement of the ego. Through it, you manage somehow. You steer your life somehow. If the whole takes possession, then there is no problem. You become a man of power. Then there is no need for this ego. You can throw it to the dogs. But you can do the otherwise also. You can simply destroy this ego through chemicals. This can be done. Then there will be problem. You will become simply abnormal. You will feel certain powers, but that power will be false because the whole has not taken possession of you. Many people, many cases have been reported. One girl in New York, under LSD, just jumped out of the 30th floor. Because she thought she can fly. And when you are under a drug, if this thought comes you can fly, there is no doubt. You believe in it so totally. Because the doubter, the ego is not there. Who is there to doubt? You believe it. But the whole has not accepted. Chandas who may have flown. Chandrasu may have gone out of the window like a bird on the wings. But under LSD you cannot go. Ego is not there, so you cannot doubt. And the whole has not taken possession, so you are not powerful. The power is not there, only the illusion of power that creates trouble. You can do under alcohol, certain things. Once it happened in a circus. A cage was broken. The circus was traveling in a special train from one town to another. The cage was broken and the lion escaped. So the manager collected all his strong men. And he said, before you go into the night, into the jungle, to find the lion, I will give you some wine. It will give you courage. All of them, 20 persons, they took big sacks. The night was cold and dangerous. And courage was needed. But Mulla Nasruddin refused. He said, I will take only soda. The manager said, but you will need courage. He said, in such moments, I don't need courage. These moments are dangerous. Night and the lion. Courage can be dangerous. I would like to be a coward and alert. When you don't have power and a drug can give you courage, it is dangerous. You can move madly on a certain path. This is the danger of the drug. But society is not afraid because of this. Society is afraid if you have a glimpse beyond society. Then you can never be adjusted to it. And society is such a madhouse. To be adjusted with it, you must not be allowed any glimpse outside. But religions are also against for a different reason. They say be a drunkard of the divine wine. Because then you are rooted, centered, then you are powerful. If there is such security in wine, how much more in Tao? The wise man is hidden in Tao. Nothing can touch. Absolutely nothing can touch. Why? If you follow me rightly, only the ego can be touched. It is very touchy. Somebody just looks at you in a certain way and it is touched. He has not done anything. Somebody smiles a little and it is touched. Somebody just turns his head and does not look at you. It is touched. It is very touchy. It is like a wound. Always green. You touch it and the pain arises. A single word, a single gesture. Even the other may not be aware that he has done to you, but he has touched. And you always think the other is responsible. He has wounded you. No. You carry a wound. Your whole being is a wound with the ego. And you carry it around. Nobody is interested in hurting you. Nobody is positively waiting to hurt you. Everybody is engaged in safeguarding his own wound. Who has got the energy? But still it happens. Because you are so ready to be wounded. So ready. Just waiting. Just on the brink. Anything. You cannot touch a man of Tao. Why? Because there is no one to be touched. There is no wound. He is healthy, healed, whole. This word, whole, is beautiful. The word heal also comes from the whole. And the word holy also comes from the whole. He is whole, healed, holy. Be aware of your wound and don't help it to grow. Let it be healed. And it will be healed only when you move to the roots. Less head, the wound will be healed more. No head, there is no wound. Live a headless life. remove as a total being and accept things, even for 24 hours tried. Total acceptance, whatsoever happens, somebody insults you, accept it. Don't react and see what happens. Suddenly you feel an energy flowing in you that you have not felt. Somebody insults you, you feel weak. You feel disturbed. You start thinking how to revenge. That man has hurt you. And now you will move around and around. Days, nights, you will not be able to sleep in dreams. Months, even years, people can take their whole life for a small thing because somebody insulted you. You just look back in your past and you will remember a few things. You were a small child and the teacher in the class called you an idiot and you still remember it. And you feel resentment. Your father said something, they have forgotten. Even if you remind, they will not be able to remember. Your mother looked in a certain way, and since then the wound has been there. And it's still green. Anybody touches it, and you will explode. Don't help this wound to grow. Don't make this wound your soul. Go to the roots. Be with the whole. For 24 hours try. Just 24 hours. Not to react. Not to reject. Whatsoever happens, someone pushes you and you fall on the ground, fall. Then get up and go home. Don't do anything about it. Somebody hits you, pull down your head. Accept it with gratitude. Go home. Don't do anything. Just for 24 hours. And you will know a new upsurge of energy that you have never known, a new vitality arising from the roots. And once you know it, once you have tasted it, your life will be different. Then you will laugh of all the foolishness that you have been doing, of all the resentments, reactions, the revenges in which you were destroying yourself. Nobody else can destroy you except you, and nobody else can save you except you. You are the Judas and you are the Jesus. Enough for today.